Hello, on this week's show we sit down with Jill Sander, creative directors, to discuss their curation of the latest edition of a magazine curated by. Plus, we tell you all about the incredible new Buffalo Zine, and we have some great tips for future publishers out there. At the end of the show, we pay tribute to designer genius Milton Glaser. Enjoy! From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Coming up on the show, I speak to the team behind Buffalo Zine, who dedicated their latest issue to nature. We also speak to Anna Bender on her creative content kit. But first, known for their work in fashion as creative directors of Jill Sander, Lucy and Luke Meyer have turned their talents to publishing in the curation of the new issue of international title A Magazine Curated By, a very poetic piece exploring the relationship between Mother Nature and human nature. They sat down with Monocle's design editor Nolan Giles and respected British designer and architect John Pawson, one of the many global talents who have contributed to the issue. To tell us more, Luke started by explaining the concept of the title.
The concept of the magazine was really, you know, when you're given sort of the carte blanche to do whatever you want with something of that scope, we really thought, well, what's important, like the most important thing to us, and maybe what's the thing that links all the projects we've done and our work in general. And again, it's quite a broad concept, but the idea of Mother Nature being where we're from and how much it's been a part of our upbringing and maybe our subconscious reference points. And then also human nature, the idea of the fact that also fashion is not something that's just a singular art form on its own. It's really something that sort of involves like culture on many levels, whether it's music, art, photography, architecture, film. So it was really something where, as designers, we react to things and we kind of, you know, fashion's our medium of expression, but we're obviously living in a world that's very dynamic and moving, and, you know, you have different influences and different things that become more or less important as you go along. So that's sort of the human nature side, and maybe also what attracted us to the design field in the first place. And then as far as contributors, I mean, John, again, he made it to the top of the list. Because we also knew that he was, you know, he's a great photographer, and, you know, his process is very interesting, and his artwork is very interesting beyond his architecture. So he was somebody that we looked to kind of, yeah, like right at the beginning, saying like, okay, we need to have him show off a little his other talents.
And John, from what I understand, you take a lot of photographs, and you've been taking them for a very long time. So when you're coming to the point of selection for this title, and you haven't got a massive amount of pages to work with, what was the deliberation process, and what did you come to in terms of what you wanted to highlight?
Oh, well, Luke and Lucy were very specific. So we focused on spiritual buildings in nature, but of course, as an architect, your whole involvement with your work is with nature, because the architecture is in nature and you're always using nature, and you know, it's all about that. So it's, in a way, it was sort of, I couldn't help be involved with nature, but I think if you're designing objects or clothes or something, it's not necessarily apparent that that's the background for it. So we focused on some sacred buildings, actually Japanese Zen Buddhist temple garden, one of the churches that were built into the rock in Lalibela in Ethiopia, a chapel I did, a ecumenical building, actually, because it could be any religion, on a cycle path in Bavaria, and obviously that amazing one in Petra, the Roman temple. So those were the four things, all very clearly examples of using nature for the site and for the actual construction.
And that wooden chapel, I mean, we've talked about this before, and I've spoken to you a little bit in the past about this kind of idea of a spiritual site. I'd love to kind of hear a little bit of that kind of definition. You mentioned before, you know, it's not just for Christian religion, it's a space where it's for contemplation, but it does have an effect on you. It does move you when you're in there in a certain sort of way. So I just kind of love to hear your kind of take on this definition of a spiritual site through the lens of your work.
Well, you know, architects are builders and craftsmen and, you know, doing a sort of straightforward job in a sense. And when you build churches or religious places, you know, they're still made out of bricks and mortar. But you know that what their use is going to be. So you try with all the things at hand, like light and proportion and scale and all the rest of it, to give them the right atmosphere that hopefully will contribute to people feeling, you know, spiritual. And there's no sort of guarantees, and there's no magic wand. I mean, you just have to be very careful and do the best you can, and it ends up, because of the light and the acoustics and various other things, it feeling good to be in, I guess, and conducive to contemplation or meditation or prayer or.
And just quickly going back to the magazine, you know, we've talked about the spiritual sites, and you mentioned before, you know, the expression of your ideas in this print form, and I think magazines are particularly good at really being able to capture a lot, and, you know, but kind of explain them in quite a good and methodical way. What are the other kind of emotions you were trying to generate from the reader throughout this title? What's the experience that you guys wanted to someone like myself or for a reader anywhere around the world to have by flicking through the magazine?
I guess in a way we worked on the edit quite a lot to kind of get the right flow of, you know, and I guess we were really interested in the idea of sort of separating the text from many of the images so that you kind of start to feel a certain way about this image relating to the next one, which then relates to the next one in a certain way. So I think in the end, you know, there wasn't a specific emotion that we wanted people to feel at the end. We just wanted to have people come away with a real understanding of where our mind is. You know, we tried to make it really kind of a single body of work that would represent sort of our perspective and what we think is important as far as design work
or craftsmanship or artists, or, you know, who we thought was important, also like who are influences on us. And so it was also nice to give back and, you know, show these influences and give the space. But I guess, yes, most importantly, it was important things to us that we wanted to portray.
It has an amazing sort of physical presence. I mean, it's easy with a building because, you know, it's there and you can walk into it and it has atmosphere. But this is an extraordinary body of work. I mean, and a physical thing. And I've had it around. Well, I actually got three copies, but I've had it around in here for some time. And it's the content. I mean, I don't think I've ever gone through a series of photographs where I've felt influenced and that they are so many that I haven't seen before, and the juxtaposition, and it's a real body of stuff. I mean, it's very different from anything else, actually.
And Lucy and Luke, I guess just on that, it would be really interesting to hear, I guess, your interpretation of print and publishing, because like John said, you know, it's like, If you want to create something like this, it's physical and it's a representation of yourselves. You want it to be the best it can possibly be, and maybe, you know, a magazine that's being published every week, it's a lot trickier to do that. So how important, I guess, is time and consideration when thinking about publishing something with your name on it?
I mean, we thought about a lot of, I mean, about the actual object. I mean, that's sort of also our daily work anyway. So you kind of start to, you know, look at things and say, okay, what do we want it to feel like? What do we want it to do? You know, I think it was really important to us that there was no kind of gutter in the middle. So like to kind of have the stitched binding so you could lay everything flat and really sort of take advantage of sort of that, you know, that size canvas for everything. We didn't want it to be too tricky either. We didn't want to add all these different papers and all this different kind of, you know, sheens, or, you know, is it glossy and matte and this kind of thing. We wanted to be quite pure,
but I think solid.
No. Yeah. But I think, yeah, like you can't escape sort of the physicality of something when you talk about, like, you know, publishing. And I think even now, after, you know, we read probably all of our books in our apartment during the lockdown. It's kind of nice to have something new that's physical rather than a computer screen. And also just the fact that you're giving people these things in a certain scale and a certain order, because there's no order really when you're just clicking through something on a computer. So in a way, the layout, the order, the edit, that creates again another tool for expression.
And the new issue of a magazine curated by is out now. And now to one of the most fun magazines out there, Buffalo Zine. Their latest issue, renamed Buffalo Earth, is a 600-page-plus delight dedicated to our relationship with nature. It seems nature is very much on trend at the moment. I spoke to the magazine publisher and creative director, David Uskisa, and their editor-at-large, Andrea Lazarov.
We call it Buffalo Earth. Sometimes we change the name of the magazine according to the theme. Internally, we call it the hippie issue because it's all about all things hippie. It's about reconnecting with yourself, with your community, with nature. Yeah, it's all about this kind of hippie lifestyle that we are interested in, and we wanted to make an issue to celebrate it and to make it like really fun and desirable and appetizing.
And Andrea, how funny that, you know, this hippie issue or Buffalo Earth came in the middle of a pandemic. And in a way, what I've been noticing, people are connecting more with nature. They are, you know, walking the local parks. It became even more important to them. So I think, I mean, I have a feeling you didn't know that there would be a pandemic, but how funny that the topics kind of matched in a way, right?
Yeah, it was one of those, I mean, in a way, pleasant surprise, but not so pleasant because like the global situation is horrible. But yeah, in a way, it was kind of this message that we wanted to kind of give with the issue was amplified. And in my case, I was actually writing a piece in the issue, which was a piece about a photographer called Lucas Folia, who went with different communities that had left basically society and went off the grid and lived off the grid. And I was in the middle of like the most severe lockdown here in Madrid. And I was thinking, man, I should have gone out in nature before like getting stuck in the city. So yeah, now even after writing this issue and doing this issue, I want to reconnect with nature even more.
Well, same here, you know. And the view, a question that I think Buffalo Zine always like, you know, to push itself to be even grander for the next issue. And come on, this magazine has more than 600 pages. What is the amount of work, David? I guess you say, you know what, let's add some more. I mean, so tell us, I mean, how do you have this push, you know, to keep making it bigger, more interesting? Tell us a bit more.
We're a bit crazy like that because we don't really have a structure or a limit in pages, but obviously it in terms of work and budget, it's not very practical to work this way. But the thing with this issue is because it was such a broad theme, we wanted it to cover it from many different angles. We wanted to have stories and fashion and features about many different things like psychedelics and yoga and Reiki and mindfulness and alternative therapies and living in nature and bird watching and gong baths, so many things. So we wanted to have a lot of artists and creators to speak about all these fields, and it just became huge. It was a little bit out of our hands. And in the end, when we gathered all the content, we had to do like a very strict edit, and we actually left a lot of things out. But still, we managed to have 616 pages. When we saw the issue, when we took it out of the box, when it came from the printer, we couldn't believe how thick it was because we didn't really expect it. But yeah, it's like the yellow pages of...
But if I may say, I mean, even though my problem sometimes with magazines with a lot of pages, even though I love them, they can be slightly hard to read, but that's not the case, actually. I mean, if you're sitting down, actually, the pages, I don't know, there's something about the design of it that makes it quite easy, actually, to flick through. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's also because of the spine, the naked yes. Spine allows you to open the magazine completely. So it also kind of gives you kind of more of a flat view of the magazine, even though it's like a really thick and heavy magazine, like kind of this naked spine, which is kind of a stylistic decision to kind of recreate a bit of a maybe a hippie-ish or zine attitude also helped kind of this nice viewing of the magazine, which I think David had it in mind, but it also could be like a little happy accident.
Even though I think you have to take it in small doses, this issue, because it's impossible to read front to back in one go. You need to leave it on your table and kind of like take it little by little, one day, next weekend, because it's really long otherwise.
I agree. I think it's best.
It's value for money.
Exactly, which is always important these days. And I want to ask each one of you to choose, I'm sure it's hard to choose a favorite, but like an interesting profile, an interesting story of the latest issue that you really enjoyed. I have to say, I'm a big fan of Robin. I loved that story with her. And I was surprised. I was genuinely not expecting that. But again, there's so many other interesting. But let's start with you, perhaps, Andrea. And then Davi can tell us another one.
I think there are, with this issue, that all the features have been really, really good. And it's, you know, it's always, I don't want to go into a cliche and say it's always hard to choose, but I think for me, a really interesting one was a conversation between Mike Jay and Stephen Reed, which they are two psychedelic experts. Stephen Reed is the founder of the Psychedelic Society in London, and Mike Jay, he's an expert on mescaline, which is kind of one of the earliest psychedelics. It's a bit of an unknown, you know, people kind of tend to think of ayahuasca and peyote, and mescaline is a bit left behind. But yeah, that conversation between both of them for me was really, really interesting. But also, I don't know, Miriam Lancewood, that interview was amazing. She's incredible. When Liam did that interview, who's also works in the future with us, he came back and he's like, oh my God, this interview has been totally amazing. She basically lives with her husband out in the woods, without anything, hunts herself. Basically, her thought process and what conclusions she's come to after living in the woods for so long are really, really interesting.
Amazing. What about you, Davi?
I'm going to tell you about Robin, which is the one that got your attention. It was actually her concept. She's very into dream analysis and many other esoteric things. So she told us, why don't I share with you guys some of my dreams from my dream diary, and then we get them analyzed. So we found this interpreter in LA and we put them in conversation, and was gonna be an hour conversation, ended up being like 4 hours. I think our editor Liam at some point, he just went like, oh, sorry guys, I'm gonna leave you alone and you go on. And he left the recorder. It was 4 hours of conversation with this dream analyst, and Robin kind of like taking apart and dissecting all her dreams and kind of like going very, very deep into analyzing them and interpreting them.
I wanna say just one thing. There was a really interesting thing that I thought of. The dream analyst made Robin kind of repeat the same word over and over to kind of interpret what part, I don't know, what meant. So there was like a tiger in her dream, so she would have to say like tiger like 15 times. And that was kind of fun and interesting to see like how just one word kind of had all these different definitions or these different meanings for her.
That was Davi Uskisa and Andrea Lazarov from Buffalo Zine. Their latest issue, Buffalo Earth, is out now. And now on the show, pay attention, future magazine makers. This might be helpful in setting up your media platform in the future. Ana Bender, a fellow Brazilian, just published Creative Content Kit, a four-step process for creating content strategy if you're a podcast or a print newspaper. It's all in there. In each stage, there's a set of cards with methods, content types, platforms, and tools. Ana explains a bit more.
It is a kit to ideate and create content strategy. And then when I first say that, people are like, okay, so what can I do? Can I, am I going to find like a way to have 100K followers on Instagram? And then I have to say, no, this is not what you're going to find here. So the Creative Content Kit is a method cards toolkit. So it's a box with 65 cards. And the cards, they are organized in four steps. Those four steps, they are inspired in a theory written by Mikhail Bhaskar, which is a British author. So Mikhail wrote this theory where he explains how publishers are experts in trading content, in curating content and really creating market from content. So I use his theory to organize these cards in four steps. So you're gonna find like a structure where you're gonna think about your audience. You're gonna think about your business, products, services, and your brand. And the next step, you're gonna find types of content. The third step, you're gonna find platforms. And in the fourth step, you're gonna find techniques and some tools and things that you could do to really like amplify the message. So what the kit gives you is like a structure. First of all, is a structure to organize your plan, so to create your strategy. But then when you go into the cards, I don't know if, how much you read about the cards, but if you read the cards, you see that they will trigger actions. So they will make you act, they will make you think about a response. And when you respond, you are immediately you're going to start ideating. It's going to trigger ideas, and you're going to start like organizing all the ideas you have about content in a very different way, I believe.
Well, and I love the platform one because it's quite complete. I mean, I was mentioning magazine, but you know, I'm just reading here: newspaper, podcast, Instagram. I mean, you're it's very much up to date, even to the newer ones that especially the young generation is using. But I love here, for example, the card for newspaper. You should include entertaining pieces like crosswords. I mean, to be honest, that's kind of essential in a newspaper, you know?
What I liked about the platform stage, Fernando, is that I think nowadays, I don't know how you see it, but sometimes I feel like people are obsessed about the digital platforms, and they are obsessed about like kind of like with a feeling like a fear of missing out. Oh, I'm not in that platform. Should I be there? Or should I leave like the let's say Facebook? Should I just forget about it? And I think we shouldn't think about the platform first. It's very important. Definitely it's important, but we should just think about first about the audience and the experience and the values you want to share with your audience, the type of content. And then when you arrive in platform, it's quite complete. You have lots of options, but still, I also feel like that it's still missing things, that there's going to be always space to update it, you know, but I like I like to provoke and say that, for example, like in the newspaper, in a book, they are in the same step or in the same stage as Instagram or Pinterest. So this is something that Mikhail made me see, that publishing is not, and managing content is not just about creating books, right? It's not about making books. It's about really thinking in the symbolic value of what you are doing and the experience you are bringing to the audience. So I like to put it in the same way so people understand that book is a huge market, but the same way is like a platform to just to communicate and frame content, really.
And Anna, what's your background, actually? I'm very curious because, you know, those cards, you know, they talk about so many things. I'm very curious, where did you came from? What did you study?
So it's funny, but my undergrad was in fashion. And for like 13 years, I worked in the fashion industry, and I worked with strategic design in higher education. But the bits that I'm bringing to this, that I'm bringing to the, when I look to the publishing system, let's say, that I'm talking a lot about, it's because I did a master in publishing here in the UK. So I'm bringing my point of view from strategic design. So what's strategic design? Strategic design is an area of design that uses the, let's say, the tools of design to solve problems creatively, but in a more, in a broader way, let's say, in a more systemic way. So what I did was I looked to the publishing industry from the point of view of a strategic designer, thinking, okay, if this is a system, how can we open these codes to more people? How can we make people see that this is really relevant for anyone who wants to work with content? And how can we make this become something that is very tangible, that is very visual, so anyone can really use it? How can I make it people experiment a little bit? Because I think this is something that strategic design brings as well, and also design thinking. Like, it's proven that as we can experiment and prototype and test things, it becomes more real, and then we can really see that we are not missing the point of our idea once it becomes real in the real world. And I see that we are all experimenting with content, right? We are all like content designers nowadays. We're all like taking pictures, writing frames, editing, and creating so many things that are like, speaking about the digital, there are so many apps and things that you can use. Also like the printing, like I'm a big fan of like Risograph, for example. There are so many things being nice things being published like quickly and in a very accessible way, like in Rezo, for example. So this side of experimenting, of opening the codes, creating something very visual, all this is because I have the background in strategic design, definitely.
That was Anna Bender there. Her creative content kit is out now, published by Biz Publishers. And before we go, listeners, I would like to pay a little tribute to the great designer Milton Glaser. Some of you on the stack might know him as the co-founder of New York Magazine. Others might know him from his iconic I Heart New York logo. Monaco's Rob Bound spoke to Milton back in 2015 on our show The Big Interview, which you can listen to on our website. I chose a highlight of that chat where he talks about the success of that iconic logo.
It just started to enter into the culture. Now, it was peculiar because most thing you do as a designer lasts 3 weeks or 4 weeks. They all are ephemeral stuff. They're planned to be used for a certain period of time and then they go away forever. But this just persisted, and there are reasons for it, one of which was that it wasn't simply an advertising slogan. It really reflected what the people in the city were feeling. And everybody was kind of upset about what was happening to the city. I mean, it was sort of decomposing before your eyes, and more crime on the streets and more dirt. And the city had lost its aura in the most significant way. People didn't want to come here anymore. And finally, somebody said, that's enough. We're not going to take it anymore. And it began to turn. And then this became a kind of a symbol of that turn. It was something people wanted to commit to. They said, I'm tired of all this negativity. I love this city. And so it became congruent with the feeling that was in the atmosphere. It was a statement that people wanted to make. It wasn't something they were driven to, like buying a product. I mean, they wanted to express their love for the city.
That was the great Milton Glaser speaking to Rob Bound. That's it for this week's show. My thanks, as always, to our editor, Nora Hull. If you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fp@monaco.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And of course, you can always listen to it again at monaco.com or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud. And remember, we also have a Monaco 24 app. Make sure to subscribe to the stack. And before we go, as usual, a little song for you. The Fifth Dimension with Aquarius. Let the sun shine in. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me. This is the dark-